From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 179 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope cringe comedy and our top five favorite or cringiest examples of cringe comedy. As always, I'm your host, Nick, and this week I'm joined by
Demo
and Kyle.
Demo.
Yeah.
I heard you're grumbling.
Yeah, I hate this. I hate cringe comedy.
You are not the only one. I can tolerate it, but Nelly just can't.
Like, there are many shows that, like, I refuse to watch. Curb Your Enthusiasm. One of the things on my list, I've never made it all the way through because it's just too cringy for me. I think it's interesting because a lot of comedy comes from empathy, I think. And I think that's why, not to belittle Nanette, I know there are a lot of people that love it, but that's what I love about self-deprecating comedy, is that you're not laughing at the person, you're empathizing with the negative self-talk that occurs in your own head. That's what I think, anyhow. So by saying that, you develop a communal experience, and you guys laugh together at the inanity of life. So I'm all for self-deprecating comedy. Anyhow, as long as you're not too hard on yourself, and it's in good fun. But, cringe comedy, on the other hand, is the most extreme situation of where the empathy becomes uncomfortable because you would hate to be the person.
Yeah.
And, I can't stand it.
Yeah, it's something that's gotten really popular in the last maybe 10, 15 years in TV comedy. Curb is a big one. Another one that I'll have on my list is a pretty common example of this. But for whatever reason, it's just something that a lot of people really enjoy watching. And I can do some of it, but sometimes it's just too much. And I'll get into more specific examples in my top five list. There's a term called Fremdschaman. Fremdschaman. It's German, and it apparently means vicarious shame.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like Schadenfreude, but only.
What's Schadenfreude?
So that's.
I've heard of that.
It's the glee that you feel when something bad happens to someone.
Oh, God. What an awesome term.
Why do they have a word for that?
It's great.
If they,
I get a lot of mileage out of that word. But Fremdschaman, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but yeah. It's a pretty good, vicarious shame is a better descriptor than I think anything I'd be able to come up with talking about cringe comedy for an hour. But it's really just seeing people embarrass themselves or get themselves into embarrassing situations.
Yeah.
And it can be funny. A lot of times it's at the expense of, I don't know if the UK Office is on anybody's list. Is it?
Yeah, it's okay. You can talk about it now.
No, we'll get into it. But just David Brent sometimes says such horrible things it's, It goes from being funny because he's embarrassing himself to, like, you just feel, like, bad. Yeah. Like, he'll just say things that are, like, racist or misogynist, and it's not funny anymore. It's
just, yeah, and part of it, too, is that they don't introduce these characters as the antagonist or the, when it's cringy, it's because for some reason you care about the character and you're rooting for them. So you're watching the character that the audience has been manipulated to identify with do something that is cringy. And there's like the nervous, it's the only kind of comedy I know that, well, no, that's not necessarily true. There's a lot of other types that use nervous laughter to start something out, but it does. I don't know. When I laugh at it, a lot of times it's like a nervous laughter.
Yeah,
not a joyous laughter.
It's not a belly laugh.
No.
It's, yeah. So we said it's mostly TV, but there are some movies that do it.
Yeah,
too.
I feel like there's a across mine, there's a quality of being ad-libbed with a lot of the comedy, where I don't know if there's a big difference between planned jokes and jokes that just come from the actor just saying whatever they feel like in the moment. Mm-hmm. That makes them particularly awkward. But yeah, there's a good bit of that, I think, in my top five list.
Yeah, I do have a couple examples on mine that are a little bit more palatable. Because I think if you do it right, it can be really funny.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I've got a couple at least, but most of mine are like...
You focus on the cringe instead of the comedy.
I don't like watching them as much.
Yeah, I think maybe I'll distinguish that when I'm doing mine. Like, which one of these... Because most of the ones I put down here are ones that either I enjoy now or was able to enjoy when it first aired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So should we jump into our top fives?
Yeah.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man. I was going to ask you for your top five records to play on a Monday morning and all that, and you just had to ruin it. Well, we'll do it next Monday. No! I want to do it now!
All right, Kyle, what is your number five?
My number five is a show that I didn't watch a ton of, but I knew it was really popular back in the day, and that's Crank Yankers, which is a show that's sort of just based on something that really makes me uncomfortable to begin with, and that's just prank phone calls. Some radio stations that we listen to on the way to work still do them, and they're so hard to listen to because it's kind of preying on someone who's very vulnerable to like being tricked. And
someone who answers the phone now. Who's answering their phone now? I never answer the phone.
But with the radio, it's always someone like calling in saying, you need to prank this person because they're hot tempered and stuff like that. And it just ends up the person curses someone out or whatever. But it's, I don't know, that type of comedy really stresses me out. And For the prank phone calls in particular, I'm always worried about the person who's doing the lie also, and like that they're going to mess up or say the wrong thing too. Yeah. And like, that's another thing that goes along with this, the prank or whatever. But yeah, Crank Yankers. I don't know how long the show was around for. It was a cool idea, but really uncomfortable to watch sometimes.
Yeah.
So that would be your number five.
My number five is going to be, let's just jump into the British Office. I think the moment that best exemplifies this is, there's a party going on and two people do a really, cool, like disco dance. That's an oxymoron, but it's not an embarrassing one. I'll say that. And then David Brent, not to be upstaged and wanting to contribute as well to the festivities, gets up and does a dance that is endlessly cringy to me. And per Ricky Gervais, he does not remember doing this dance. Like, it's blocked out of his memory. It's that whole show is filled with moments where he, because you're rooting for him to actually be effective as a leader, and he is incapable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, The Office, British version, 2 seasons. Actually, I think they have a Christmas special.
Yeah, it's a Christmas special too.
Yeah. Anyhow, that's my number five. Nick,
my number five is one that is cringy, but is actually enjoyable to watch, and it's all of Joe Bluth's magic tricks.
Yes,
in Arrested Development, because he's so bad at it. He blasts Europe's The Final Countdown whenever he does it. Half of his show is just him running around, like, holding cards in the air. But then when he does do them, they always go horribly. He gets his fingers chopped off in one. He does one at his dad's funeral. Yeah. And the casket falls, like, into a big ditch. If there's one thing that is, like, pervaded... Because so many people know and love Arrested Development, but it was kind of underseen, and that's why it only lasted 3 seasons in its initial run. But if there's one thing that really like managed to get into the pop culture, it was Job dancing around to The Final Countdown. Yeah.
This is actually an interesting... I want to set forward this theory. this hypothesis, and we can test the hypothesis here in a moment, but it might be that he's not really the protagonist of the show. So because he's...
Because he's like a main, like, getting credits in the title, but you'd say Michael's the
Michael
protagonist.
Or George Michael. Yeah. So because of that, it might be that cringiness is more palatable. So let's see.
We'll see. No, actually, you're right. I think what you're saying sort of drives
at least for fiction, maybe.
Yeah, I think what you're saying does actually sort of drive with if it's the protagonist, it's harder to watch.
Yeah.
I think you may be right. Kyle, what is your number four?
I'll shift my answers around just to make a nice segue. But Michael Cera, I haven't seen him in too many things recently, but he definitely had a phase where he had that really awkward acting style in something like Superbad.
By phase, if you mean his career,
is that just
his body of work?
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure, like, I don't know if he's like grown up or something, or if he's like changed at all. But specifically in something like Superbad, where he's interacting with the girl that he likes, and I can't tell, his acting style is so unique that I can't tell if it's ad-libbed or not, and it's just so hard to watch sometimes. But that is a movie that I think can get away with it, specifically, and most of the time he can. Same thing with like the Scott Pilgrim movie. He's pretty awkward interacting with Ramona Flowers, and that one is a little less cringy, but there is a bit of an awkwardness to everything he does.
The girl that he likes in Superbad also has some pretty cringy moments.
The whole cast minus not Seth Rogen,
but Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill is like the only one who's not like he's weird, but he's not.
He does it too. Like, he tries to make jokes to Emma Stone's character. Emma Stone is the one who gets away.
Funny thing is,
you know, about my back.
That's the exact line I was thinking of.
Okay, yeah. I guess there is. I don't know. Just like McLovin and Michael Cera and the other like supporting people.
Emma Stone, I think, gets away with like just being cool.
Yeah.
In the movie, I forget the actress's name, but the character's name is Becca. Definitely has maybe the cringiest moment in the movie.
I don't remember. I only saw it once.
When they're like making out.
Oh, near the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's tough to watch.
Yeah. that would be your number four.
My number four. Let's go with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Ugh. A show I can't watch because of this.
I had that and Curb listed in my honorable mentions, but like they're both shows that I kind of had to give up because it was too much.
Here's the thing is that for them, I actually don't mind it because they're all terrible people. So it's like, I don't know, the seeing them more uncomfortable and it's kind of okay with me. I don't know. I think the worst example of this though is the high school reunion episode where it's a two-parter and it ends with them just blazed out of their mind with the drink. It cuts from them like doing this dance that they think is what's happening, and then it cuts to reality. And it is just the most pathetic display.
High school reunion episodes. It reminded me of another show that had a high school reunion episode that is very cringy, but Party Down has a lot of cringy moments.
I don't know that one.
Oh, that's a great show. It was on Starz for a couple seasons with Adam Scott, Ken Marino, Jane Lynch was in it for the first season. Really good show, but there's a high school reunion episode, and that is the perfect setting for cringe comedy.
It is. Maybe, I don't know, maybe because the teenage years can just be so cringy in general as you're developing social skills and adjusting in that intermittent period between childhood and adulthood. And you do so many cringy things that it becomes much, you're taken back there.
And you have to relive
these
things that you've kind of either forgotten or managed to bury.
Yeah, like surprised. Yeah.
So yeah, that's the perfect setting for this genre.
You're absolutely right.
I haven't been to any of my high school reunions, and I will continue that.
I went to one. I found out people really don't like doctors.
Really?
It was like, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you would think that that'd be like, oh yeah, I'm a doctor now, and that would be your win.
Yeah.
I didn't bring it up. It was me and my
people went after you for it?
No, so I heard you were a doctor now.
No, it was just like people who were like talking about what they do, and or like if I said I was a doctor, they'd bring up like, oh yeah, I had this terrible doctor. Like it was just always to the negative, which, all right.
I have thoughts about whenever people say I had a terrible doctor, and usually it's like, oh, they didn't fix everything that was wrong with you. Anyways, that is a different discussion. That is a much longer rant.
I think we're
rant.
Probably alienating listeners now because
That is a much longer rant for me to go on.
What was your number five or four?
My number four is it's a show that also does it really well, and it is almost too much for me to watch along like the Curb Your Enthusiasm route. It's another HBO show, and that show is Veep.
Oh, never seen it. Good things. Great things.
It's amazing. Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays the vice president and who ends up becoming the president and then the ex-president. And the whole gist of the show is that everyone who works in politics, everyone who works in political news, everyone in that DC sphere is awful. And she always gets herself into horrible gaffes, confrontations, things like that, and it's always a disaster. But one of my favorite examples is she is making her State of the Union speech, and her speech writers are doing it, and she's like, yeah, we'll do this, and you know, we'll talk about whatever at the end, we'll talk about the future, whatever. So they upload the wrong draft to the teleprompter, so she's reading it and it just ends with the words future whatever. So she starts stumbling and she just like says all this nonsense, and she tries to spin it into, you know, we can tackle the like whatever comes to us in the future, we don't know what it is, the future whatever, and it ends up being like kind of a good speech. So that's the joke, is that she, even though she's a mess, sometimes
like
she
fails upwards.
Yeah, exactly. She's managed to be terrible at everything, and somehow she's still become the president.
That's interesting. I wonder if there's any parallels to real life.
I don't know. Not that I can think of. It's a really, really funny show. They do cursing like poetry in that show.
I heard that the insults are amazing.
They're the best. No show has better, nothing in the world has better insults than that show.
That's awesome.
Kyle, what is your number three?
My number three is one of the first people that came to mind when we were creating, or when you said that this was a trope we were going to be talking about, and that's Melissa McCarthy. She has another streak that's playing these kind of gross characters that are all about saying really weird things and falling all the time. And I still think she kind of peaked or started and peaked at Bridesmaids. The conversation she has with the air marshal on the plane talking about her undercarriage and stuff. It's like pretty much everything she says in that movie is
that's
gold,
but it's her husband in real life.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, she's kind of made a name for herself by playing this really uncomfortable character lately. So
she's nominated for an Oscar tonight in Can You Ever Forgive Me, which, not a movie I loved. I think I'd give it like three or 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Standout?
She's really good in it.
Is it a serious role?
It's a serious role, yeah.
That's cool. I think I've asked you about that before, but yeah, I'd like to see her do new things. This is a case where I'm kind of tired of what she, I mean, and she could easily be talked about with Signature Style next week, but, she does it really well. I think it's also just funny because I know her mostly as playing Suki in Gilmore Girls, And it's weird that
different character.
Yeah, and it's weird because I can actually separate her from those roles. But it's just weird to see like what she's turned into after being this really sweet character on Gilmore Girls, and now she's kind of gross and swears a lot.
Yeah, she's very good in Can You Ever Forgive Me?
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like for her to actually have more range than just this one character.
Yeah, although she is pretty cringy in that movie. She just plays like a misanthrope, like nasty person.
Then what would be your number three?
I'm going to go with Meet the Parents. I have not been able to finish this movie. I've tried it twice.
That's amazing.
Totally get it.
It was just too much.
It's the cat. I don't know, for some reason.
It was the cat. It was the volleyball. It was just it was just too much.
Oh, I have nipples. Can you milk me, Greg?
Yeah. And it's like, I just felt so bad for this guy, and I couldn't finish the movie. I liked Meet the Fockers. I loved that one because they flipped Hoffman. It. Yeah.
So you've been able to watch the sequels, just the first one you can't.
I've only seen the one sequel, but okay. I really, because it flipped it on its head, and it made it be essentially the antagonist from the first movie was now the out of water character, and it created I don't know. It was kind of a, like paying a penance movie in a sort, and it was much more easy to enjoy.
It is one of those things where you can see how you would get yourself into those awkward situations, like meeting.
That's the scariest part.
No matter what, like meeting a girlfriend or in-laws for the first time is, you're always on edge, even if there's nothing to be on edge about. You just have to like. It's a stressful experience, so anything that goes wrong feels like it's amplified.
Yeah, totally. What's your number three?
My number three, I don't know what the episode is called. It may just be called what your sister used as a trivia team name, Scott's Tots.
Oh gosh.
Which is...
That's probably the worst of that entire show.
It is an episode of the U.S. version of The Office that I can barely watch this episode. I rewatched it, like the series, and I skipped it. Because it's
too much.
Just the premise is so it's vile. It's wrong.
It's a vile premise.
Michael, the boss, the David Brent corollary for The Office, years ago assumed for whatever reason that years down the line he would be very, very rich. So he told this school of kids that he would pay for all of their colleges, and
it is vile.
Can't.
Yeah,
and that is just so, it's like the premise of that is so gross. I can't say anything else about it. It's awful to watch. It's like he does a lot of things that are cringy and hard to watch, and a lot of times they're really funny and sometimes they're not, but this one, it's not funny to me.
No,
it's bad. I can't watch it.
And the thing is, it's like there's so many moments in The Office where they humanize him, and you feel for this poor lonely guy who just wants to be loved. So putting him in a situation where he makes such a massive cruel error, it's, and like the dreams of an entire class of kids are just going to be shattered.
They do try to spin it at the end where they're like,
they all graduated.
These kids actually did better because they thought they would be getting called. Sure.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't.
College is very expensive. Yeah, it's
terrible episode. Yeah.
It's a tough episode. It's a tough episode. Kyle, what's your number two?
My number two is Eugene Levy as an actor, specifically in American Pie, but also in something like Best in Show. But yeah, in American Pie, I watched a few like best of his moments in those movies, and most of them involve him either giving a sex talk to his son or walking in on him having sex and him not like doing the normal thing, which is like kind of ignore it or walk out. He has to engage and be himself, really. And yeah, he's just like the quintessential awkward dad that tries really hard, but is just, I don't know. I don't know how many American Pie movies there were, but I feel like he was probably in all of them and played the same type of role in them. But
I think I'm going to change my list because of what you said, because you're absolutely right. He's,
And then he's not quite as awkward in something like Best in Show. There are definitely other characters. Best in Show. That movie.
That's what I was going to put as my number two because of what you said.
Yeah,
they used to call me Loopy.
But yeah,
the ongoing. So this is my number two. Is going to be Best in Show with Eugene Levy because the ongoing joke of them repeatedly running into
people that have had sex with his wife.
Yeah,
that remember, was just remember like, the roller coaster. and his reactions are hilarious too.
Like he's just a defeated man by the end of the movie, literally smashing his head into a microphone repeatedly.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Eugene Levy.
American Pie, a movie that has not aged well in the current era.
I've never seen it.
I don't know if I've seen it all the way through, but yeah, the scenes I was watching were pretty.
I kind of know the premise. Was there cheddar cheese?
Yes. Very good.
Comes full circle. Thema, would be your number two.
Yeah, I'm going to do Best in Show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
That was for the reasons that you explained.
Yeah.
And we talked about. But, I mean, that's an interesting thing with Christopher Guest movies. A lot of times, the Eugene Levy character is just super awkward. Like in A Mighty Wind, when the character he's like burnt out. It's like sad. It's very, very sad. And you just see him trying to interact with people is kind of like awful. And then, who does he play in? Oh, Waiting for Guffman. Like, he leaves his wife at the end of the movie to make it in Hollywood, this, like, 40, 50-year-old guy, in just a clearly horrid decision. Oh, it's nearly unwatchable. Gosh.
All of Christopher Guest's movies.
Yeah.
That's a recurring thing.
Like, Spinal Tap does it, too. And I feel like a lot of the performances that they give are just very...
That goes along with the ad-libbed comedy, too.
Try to, they settle into, an awkward place. Nick, your number two.
My number two is the movie Edge of 17. Have you seen
it? You guys watched it. It's very good, yeah.
It's really good. Haley Steinfeld is awesome in it. And the movie opens, I think it's the very first scene, she runs into her teacher's room and says she's going to kill herself. In the whole first half of the movie, she does it in a very dramatic way where it's not heavy. Although you can tell she probably doesn't mean it, but she does have some stuff going on. And the whole first half of the movie is leading up to that moment. And what happened is actually pretty cringeworthy in a way that I it's going to happen when it's. As it's going on, she drafts a text to someone that's very sexually explicit that she has a crush on. And you know something's...
No.
And...
That's such a terrible...
And it gets sent. And it's very difficult to watch.
Yeah.
It's... The rest... She does some other, less cringy things in the movie that are pretty funny. But that one, as you're watching it, you're like, oh, I can't laugh. I just...
Yeah. She's
it's really just hard to see. She's terrific in that movie. That's a really good movie. I enjoy that movie a lot. I also like the guy that has a crush on her, the Asian guy. He has a bunch of more palatable cringy moments because they're kind of cute and endearing.
Yeah.
So I think this movie has a nice range of kind of
stuff you're okay with and stuff you're
cute
not
cute
okay
cringy
with.
To just like ugh. But I like that movie a whole lot. Kyle, what is your number one?
My number one is specific segments in the show Jackass, and that's the hidden camera stuff that they would do, like where Johnny Knoxville would go to a yoga place with a boner or something, or like a fart machine or something, and he'd just like embarrass himself. A lot of that show was really funny to watch, but there were segments every once in a while where it'd just be this public thing where someone would like, if one of the characters would like have peed themselves in line for a movie, and they'd be surrounded by people that weren't in on it, and just seeing the reaction, and it's just like, ugh, really just hidden camera things in general. Those types of shows just, I can't. It's like meant to make you feel uncomfortable, but I just, it's really hard to watch. But yeah, those specific moments in Jackass in particular, real hard to watch. Then what would be your number one?
I had a tough time coming up with this. I thought about the Tom Green Show for the exact, and the Practical Jokers for the exact reasons you were saying. Ultimately ended up with Zero Dark Thirty, though. I'm just kidding. I went with...
you should have seen my eyes dilate.
I went with... I'm thinking Parks and Rec, because there are multiple characters in that do this. I think the worst was the debates between Leslie Knope and... I forget the guy's name.
Is it Jeremy Jam?
Is he the rich kid?
He's the...
Oh, no. Paul Rudd's character?
Yeah.
I can't remember his character's name.
But I had to turn it off at one point because of... And I still haven't seen these, several of those episodes. Mm. Part of it was because this was around election 2016 when I watched it, and I couldn't deal. But a large part of it was also... Like, one in particular, she was coming off as, like, she wanted to show how aggressive or how strong she was. So she makes a very strong statement and illustrating how he's not qualified. And he just goes, you're mean. You're mean. Like, she clearly hurt his feelings. And it was, I couldn't take it.
Bobby Newport?
Newport, yeah.
And then, what else? I mean, like, you can make the argument that John Ralphio's... John Ralphio?
Yeah.
He's. I don't think he's. I don't know. I think he's cringy, but it's like his stuff's
in a fun way.
Yeah, in a fun way. Like you want to go on that ride.
Bounce.
On his sister. His sister's the worst. His sister.
No, seriously, she's the worst. Yeah. A lot. What happened to your mustache? It rubbed off from friction. Like so many cringy things on that. But I don't know. That one's. Except for the Leslie Knope, again, the protagonist, very palatable. Nick, you're number one.
My number one. Have you guys seen Lady Bird yet?
No. Yeah.
I'm sending out, Kyle, could you read the part of Kyle? I just sent it to you on Facebook.
Oh, my gosh.
So Kyle is played by Timothée Chalamet. I will play the role of, Lady Bird.
Kyle's played by Timothée Chalamet,
so
played by Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle is Kyle. It's Timothée Chalamet. I will be... Lady Bird.
I don't know if I'd be able to do this in the same way because I don't know if I remember the scene in particular. But
it's fine. So let me set it up real quick. She's meeting this guy who she has a crush on, and she just like vandalized one of the nuns' cars at the school they go to.
Mm-hmm. What you do is very baller. You're very anarchist.
Yeah, fuck them.
Don't worry, I'm not going to snitch on you.
Well, I hope not, because I'd fucking kill your family. It's just so funny. She's trying to be like cool and playful, and yeah. She just goes like way too far. And
that seems a lot like the funny thing about my back comment. Yeah. Like,
it's so funny. She's so good in this movie. I love how this character is written. She has other cringy moments in the movie too. But that's my favorite one. Like we came across this trope to do, that's the first thing I thought of. Cause it's so hilarious. Cause she's just like, you can see it. You can like feel the gears in her mind turning. She's like, oh, I'm going to be real cool if I say this. And it just like falls so flat.
That's good.
Is one of those lines, I don't remember the scene specifically, but when she said it, did she like know she went too far herself?
Too? Yeah, she does. And then I think the next line is, he says something like, "Well, my dad has cancer, so God's doing that for us, I guess."
Oh, God. Jeez. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
She's
awesome.
She's one of our finest working actors, and that's one of the best movies of the last few years. I really love it.
I'll have to check it out.
It's one of the most I've ever related to a character.
Oh, wow.
Like, if I would... Because she's like... It's in high school. She's the same age that we were. If I was a girl back then, I probably would have been her. Like, I feel very... you just kind of get it.
Mm.
Love that movie.
Mm.
So, those were our cringe comedies. We do have some feedback. This is from Johnny Ducker on the Facebook page. These are some tropes that he's recommending that... that we do. Revealing cover-up, prove I'm not bluffing, immortality, animation age ghetto, and one that I can't believe we haven't done is Monster of the Week.
Oh my gosh.
How have we not done that?
Between Buffy and X-Files, how did we...
Yeah, it'll just be 5 Buffy episodes for me.
I'll do 5 so X-Files.
Monster of the Week, that would just be like standalone...
So yeah, Monster
villain or so like shows.
He says that we talked about it sort of in House, the show House, where
there's a problem and it gets solved every week.
Yeah, it's just every week there's a thing that needs to be solved. So like the way Buffy would work is each season there's a different big bad throughout the season, and sometimes there'll be episodes where some new development occurs with the big bad, but then you know more than half the episodes are just. This
bottle episodes.
Yeah, this creature came up and we have to kill this creature, and next week we never think about it again. It's just X-Files. The monster of the week.
Star Trek The Next Generation is very much in that vein.
Mm-hmm. And X-Files is maybe the first, I don't know if it was the first show that did it, but where there's an arc to all of X-Files, but it's very slow moving, and mostly it's just every week there's a new new case you got to solve.
Yeah,
I think that's we gotta cover this trope.
I feel like not enough shows do that type of layout. They always have to have the story that is ongoing, and mm-hmm. it's nice to have these shows where you just watch one and you're good. Like you don't feel compelled to binge watch like everything.
Yeah,
Lost probably would have benefited from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be the perfect place to set something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do...
So Monster of the Week isn't necessarily like a sci-fi thing. Like a literal monster. It's just episodes that have their own...
Yeah, because I guess... I mean, I'm sure that shows like CSI probably have a similar formula. I never watched any of them.
CSI was the thing that I was thinking about. Okay. Where I love that you can just watch one and the story gets wrapped up mm-hmm. in it. And then the next one...
Tarantino did one. Did a directed an episode, a two-hour one.
Of CSI? I didn't know that.
That sounds awesome.
I thought it was him, yeah. But it was like a... It was still... The writing was still...
Not good.
CSI, you know.
Ducker also says, I've also thought it would be interesting to do a creator episode on Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
But maybe he doesn't have a deep enough back catalog yet. I don't know. I think he's got his 5 movies, I think.
And Spaced Alone is like... Each episode is like a movie.
Yeah. I would love to do an Edgar Wright episode. It would give me an excuse to rewatch all of his movies.
I would like to rewatch Spaced. Oh my god, that show I watched.
That's funny. He was.
I've rewatched all of his movies, but I've only seen Spaced once.
He emailed us a few days ago and was talking about Spaced. I wonder if he was in the same
thinking
mindset.
About this.
Yeah,
yeah. Spaced is a really good show.
Yeah,
we've been praising Edgar Wright for a while.
Yeah,
he should have directed Ready Player One.
Yeah, he really should have. Even though Steven Spielberg is the man.
Yeah, it's not a very good movie, though. It would have benefited from Edgar Wright's, I think, like, sense
it would have benefited. It would have benefited to not be... The screenplay was written by Ernest Cline, right?
Was it?
I think it was. I mean, it makes sense that he would do that, but he had too many things that he wanted to fit in there.
It would have been cooler to see a more comic... version of
when I heard that it was live action, I was like kind of bummed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of live action, but I don't know. I it could have been like an Akira type movie. Like
that would have been
nuts.
Because the thing,
especially now with Spider-Man, like like that's doing so well. Like animated movies can be amazing too.
I can't wait for Spider-Man to come out on DVD because I'm gonna rewatch the crap out of that movie.
I want to see it for the first time.
It rules.
I need to see Aquaman too.
They're pretty similar, I've heard.
I have to see Aquaman, unfortunately. No, I haven't heard bad things.
I've heard mixed things. Some people really dig it.
I've heard his shirt's not off enough.
Yeah. I've heard that criticism a lot. Yeah.
We got some feedback from Paul in the UK. He says, hi, OTT guys. It's been a while since I sent over some suggestions. Agree. And I thought I will grace your presence with some suggestions on I Am Not Shazam. Demo, you weren't here for this. This is the trope where, you know,
the titular character is not the main character.
It's Link. It's not Zelda. Yeah. Here are three different mediums, and I don't know about you, but I'm imagining somebody reading this list out loud like a condescending person, pushing up their glasses and stating the sentences with, actually, I kind of agree. As I push up my glasses subconsciously. Here is the said list. Live action movies. The Pink Panther is about the gem and not Inspector Clouseau. Chasing Amy. Amy is Silent Bob's girl that got away and not the main character's lady in pursuit, whose name is Alyssa. We were just talking about that the other day, actually. How I need to rewatch that.
Same. I haven't seen it since high school.
Yeah, same. The Big Lebowski is about Jeffrey Lebowski, the rich dude whose legs were taken away from some person in Korea, and not the main dude, whose name is also Jeffrey Lebowski.
I appreciate that he modified that quote a little bit.
Mm-hmm. The dude, or the duder.
Duderino.
Or duder, if you're not.
Into the
if you're
El Duderino, if you're not.
If you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Yeah.
King Kong is actually not called King Kong, but is called Kong.
Kong. Yeah.
Frankenstein is the name of the professor of the monster.
Yep.
The professor. Is he a professor? I've never...
Dr. Victor Frankenstein. I don't know if he's a professor. Yeah. He might be. Yep. The book doesn't necessarily go into it.
It should be called Frankenstein's Monster. We were talking about Jekyll and Hyde the other day, Nellie and I. And she didn't know anything about it. I know very little about it, but...
Does she know the twist?
What is the twist?
Is that the same person?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think everyone knows that twist from having watched Bugs Bunny.
But she was watched The Page Master.
But she was like, Mr. Hyde the real villain, or is Mr. Hyde the villain? And I'm like, he is the villain, but I feel like it's one of those stories where you could be like, is he actually the villain, or is Jekyll the real villain? Because that sounds like something that an asshole would say.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, no. as I pulled my glasses, no. Yeah, I don't know. I read it for the first time rather not too long, like a couple years back. And it doesn't, to me, it doesn't hold up because
was he trying to cure something? Like, why was he?
Yeah, it's like if you could separate out the evil part of you, and then I forget exactly.
So he's trying to do away with evil instead. Yeah, like brought it up to the surface or something.
Yeah, by being able to separate the evil out of you, kind of thing. I think it's the entire thing is an allegory for like booze, though.
When I think of Jekyll and Hyde, I think of the Page Master.
I remember that movie. I remember seeing it in theater.
It's real scary.
I never saw The Lon Chaney. I need to see that. Loved his Phantom.
Continuing on, Paul in the UK's video games, Zelda is the princess and not the elfin main character. His name is Link. Star Fox is about the team and not the name of the main character, who is Fox McCloud. He's Irish, apparently. Super Mario Brothers isn't the name of the protagonist. He's only named Super after Mario eats a mushroom. Technically, the big baddie in all the Sonic games is Dr. Ivo Robotnik and not Dr. Eggman.
Oh.
Do people call him Dr. Eggman?
Yeah, people are starting to now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Robotnik is a way cooler name.
Yeah,
I think it's region specific, but Eggman is starting to become like a more popular name for him, which is gross.
Disagree. The main character in Metroid is not called Metroid. The character is called Samus, and spoiler alert, she's a kick-ass woman. In real life, Barbies are created by Mattel and not Barbie. Fat Tire beer is brewed by New Belgium Brewing Company and not the Fat Tire Brewing Company.
We're going a little off the rails here. This is like me saying that the main character in Jurassic Park is Dr. Alan Grant, not Dr. Jurassic Park. Like, we, like some of these are reaching, I think.
It is a your mileage may vary trope.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big Ben is the name of the bell and not the name of the tower nor the clock itself. The tower is called the tower is called Elizabeth Tower. Demo.
He is from the UK.
Yeah, he is. Could he be more UK?
That's very Chandler Reed.
Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan is not his real name. That is a title. His real name is Temujin. Is that true?
Fact checkers.
I don't know. I feel like he would have killed me because I was taller than him. Probably.
Did he kill people that are taller than him?
Yeah.
Oh.
Supposedly, Cosa Nostra does not mean the mafia. It means this thing of ours, or our thing and our family. I knew that one.
I didn't know that one.
What about the, I don't know. Never mind. What's the Japanese mafia?
Yakuza.
Yakuza. Is that, does that actually mean?
I don't know.
Mafia? I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
Yakuza.
All right. Thank you, Paul in the UK. Cringe comedy. We talked about it. If you want to learn more about it, you can head over to tvtropes.org. Or you can let us know what we didn't cover at onthetropes@gmail.com, facebook.com/onthetropes. Over on Twitter, you can give us money at patreon.com/onthetropes, and you can buy our stuff at redbubble.com/people/onthetropes. Yep.
Yep.
I've been Nick.
I've been Themo.
And Kyle.
And join us again next week when we're talking about some stuff.
On the trips.
Yeah.
This next one I'm quite looking forward to.